Dan found it Acharya Shri Prabhu Padaki Anantakoti Vaishnavindaki Nama Acharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Ben Sega Hosri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Radhar Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakti Vindaki Shri Radhar Krishna Gaura Gopa Kapina Shamakunda Radhar Kuni Giri Govardhan Ki Shri Vrindavan Thama Ki Shri Mayapur Thama Ki Ganga Maya Ki Jamuna Maya Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Tulasi Devi Ki Samaveta Bhakti Vrindaki Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha pravareva cha natumam abhijananti tatventas eyavantite. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Purport. Here it is clearly stated that there are many types of yajna performances recommended in the Vedic literatures, but actually all of them are meant for satisfying the Supreme Lord. Yajna means Vishnu. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that one should only work for satisfying yajna or Vishnu. The perfect form of human civilization, known as Varnashrama, is specifically meant for satisfying Vishnu. Therefore, Krishna says in this verse, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices, because I am the Supreme Master. Less intelligent persons, however, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for some temporary benefit. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, he had better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, although that is not pure devotion, and he will thus achieve the desired results. So Krishna is stating here that he is actually the enjoyer. He's everything that is to be enjoyed or anything enjoyable. He is actually the one who is the enjoyer. So human life is meant for sacrifice, and so then this sacrifice then is perfected when it is geared towards the Supreme Lord, when it's aimed at the Supreme Lord. If it is not aimed at the Supreme Lord, then one doesn't get the proper situation, one falls down. Falls down means he falls into the material existence. He becomes absorbed in the material existence. He may be very nice, may be very pious, very well behaved, or very wealthy, or, you know, so many good qualities that we may attribute to the material situation. But they will be materialistic. So this is the difficulty. So sacrifice is actually meant for Krishna. So human life, the specialty of it, is that it can be used for sacrifice. It means other aspects of life do not lend themselves. They already have some particular purpose in mind. You know, that they're busy sniffing around, you know, at all the fire hydrants and barking, and, you know, they already have a purpose to their life. They don't have some other purpose. But the human life is able to go beyond the eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and actually try to understand or to develop one's knowledge of and affection for the Supreme Lord. That is the speciality of the human life. Therefore, the activities that the human being does to benefit themselves or uplift themselves is actually meant to please Vishnu. It's not meant for some other purpose. If we use these things for another purpose, then we will become absorbed in the material energy. So here, Prabhupada's pointing out, if someone has any material desire, then best is to go to the Supreme Lord, pray to him. Of course, it's not pure devotion, but then that desire is not pure devotion. So then we have to decide, do we want this material desire fulfilled? If If we do, then Krishna is the only one to do it. We shouldn't be approaching someone else or thinking that I will fulfill it myself. Only by Krishna's grace can we fulfill even our material desires. And by that, one, we feel embarrassed, but you know, then we start to think about it, the importance of it. But at the same time, then there is the difficulty of if we don't approach the Lord, then we're depending upon our own prowess, our own abilities. And our own abilities, then these are also God-given. So then we're using God-given abilities for our own purpose. So this is not good. It means we try other methods, then we see many approach, you know, other demigods or other personalities for the fulfillment of the desires. But these desires do not become actually fulfilled in a way that is uplifting. If we leave the Supreme Lord out of the equation, then there's no question that we will be purified and uplifted. This is the situation, is that whether we have material desires or not, we still need to approach the Supreme Lord. That is the human platform. So even if we have material desires, if we are fulfilling those desires with the Lord in the equation, then we will gradually become purified from those desires. We will be able to move on to higher and higher levels of consciousness. But if we leave him out for some reason or another, either not seeing the need or not seeing how they can be connected or not approaching the Lord at all, then these situations are dangerous. These will create a situation of which we may then fall away or compromise our spiritual development. So Krishna is warning that here. This is chapter 9, verse 24. So then, here, this chapter is the most confidential knowledge. So then he's telling about this, that others are worshipping so many places, they have their material desires, they're going so many places to try to fulfill them, but actually you should be trying to fulfill those by approaching him. That would be proper. Though it is not the best, but at least you're fulfilling, you're approaching. Means one may say, well, why should we do that? It's just like the child has a material desire, he approaches the parents. They don't feel bad about it. You know, only approach me if you have spiritual desire. No, because they're the parents. They'll fulfill, you know, they'll try to fulfill whatever desire is there. But in a way that's fitting, that is also to be understood. That if you go to the parents and you tell them you want something, if it's appropriate, the parents will give it. If it's not appropriate, they'll make some adjustments like that. So that's the way Krishna is. It means we want something, we go to him. He may give it in that form, he may make some adjustments, but in any case, our desire will be fulfilled, but at the same time, it will be miraculously also removed. It means our material desires will also disappear if we approach Krishna for our material desires, because he will fulfill them in a way that we lose interest in that material desire. So that is the advantage. The demigods won't do that. If we endeavor ourselves, that won't happen. So therefore, it's very important that we approach Krishna, because if our purpose is to develop love for Krishna, get to Krishna, then we must keep this in mind, right? We must always remember that, okay, we have to be practical, we have to engage in so many activities in our life, maintaining the family and doing so many things. But is that our goal? Right? Can our goal be perfect maintenance of the family? Can that be our goal? Right? Can we take that as the ultimate satisfaction? If we think about it, no. Krishna has to be at the end of the equation. He has to be the purpose. Because whatever you do, family changes, the children grow up, you know, then we ourselves die, others die. So at some point, you can't count it as the ultimate satisfaction. So therefore, then we must prepare ourselves to connect ourselves to the Supreme Lord. And by that, then we will be satisfied, because him being eternal, us eternal, that connection will be good. Therefore, then if we count the Lord into the equation, then when we approach him, he removes those desires. Then we have no problem. We only have a problem because we have the desire. Right? Someone says, I have to be realistic in my life. means I have to be realistic about the material desires I have and the endeavor to fulfill them. That's the realism we're dealing with. So it's only a real because it's there. If it wasn't there, we're not trying to fulfill the desire someone else has. You know, like someone else has a desire to be in the Guinness Book of World Records for eating the most bicycles. You know, if we don't have that desire, we can't talk about the reality of I got to get money, I got to buy bicycles. You know, I got to buy files. You know, to file them down into powder. You know, like that. No, you don't have those desires. There's no need. Right? So you're fulfilling desires you have. If they weren't there, you wouldn't endeavor. Right? But because we identify so much with the mind and its desires, therefore we just figure it's me. So it's just natural, it's normal. Right? But the mind is not us. Right? The mind is a material element. And due to our previous sojourn for the material world, we have developed material desires. You know, that this will make me happy. Because why this will make me happy? Because that didn't make me happy. So then I might as well try this. Others say it's good. You know, I look in the magazines and they say it's good. You know, so it must be okay. Right? The guy has a smile on his face, right? He's jumping like that, so it must be okay. You know? And so then we make our plan. So it's just the mind desires. The mind decides, this is what I want. So then we endeavor for it. So it's not us. But since we like to identify it with us, therefore fine. But look at it realistically that we're only trying to fulfill it because it's there. Right? Right? Why did they climb the mountain? Because it's there, right? You know, that's all. There's not another reason. Right? If it wasn't there, no one would be climbing the mountain. Right? Since it's there, then someone has to try. So since the desire is there, we're trying to fulfill it. So this is an important aspect. If we can contemplate things to this degree, then we'll start to see, then we can actually take control of our life. Let's talk the modern, take control of your life. No, it just means allow yourself to be swept away by the modes of nature. Don't be controlled by anyone else. That's all. Like that. Someone's trying to keep you from falling over or slipping and sliding. Don't free yourself from this control. You allow yourself to slip and fall and crack your own head. Why you should let anybody stand in your way of the freedom of cracking your own head? Right? This is what we're saying. Because if we just said, I do what I want to do, means I want to do it or the modes of nature? Who put the idea into your head in the first place? Right? Did we fill out a form? Yes. On Tuesday at 3:00 in the afternoon, I want to have the desire for a plate of hot chips. Right? And then suddenly at 3:00, bang, there it is. Okay, right on time. You know? It doesn't work like that. The modes of nature just put it into our head. Maya puts it into our head. That's where it comes from. It doesn't come. We're thinking we're free. We're putting it in our head. We're independent. But that's the illusion. We're not. So when we understand that, that's when we take control. Right? When we understand that God's in control, the modes of nature, all these other things, I'm not this mind, so what the mind dreams up is not me, that's when we start to become in control. Before that time, we're not in control. So don't fool yourself like that. That's when you take control. It's when you understand that I'm not the mind, and the desires it has are not me. But since I'm so conditioned to them, then I will set about fulfilling them according to the rules of sacrifice, right, to Vishnu. Then I will fulfill those desires through that means. That will please the Lord, and it will remove this desire. Right? Because we want to be happy. That's the bottom. It's not that we fulfill the desire. That's our purpose. Our purpose is not to fulfill the desire. Our purpose is to become happy by fulfilling that desire. That's what we want. If we fulfill the desire, we don't become happy. Right? The guy climbs the mountain, gets to the top, and he feels miserable. You know, he's not going to be satisfied. Right? You know, you go out, you save your money, you finally buy that car that you've always wanted, and you feel miserable. You're not going to be satisfied. Right? But if you're walking down the street and it's a nice day and you're happy, you're happy. You're satisfied. You don't need to do anything else. You know, hey, you want to do this? No, I'm fine. You know, I'm great. You know, I'm just taking a walk, nice day, pleasant. So happiness is what we're trying to get, not the fulfillment of the desire. The fulfillment of the desire is a means to get happiness. Therefore, if these desires can be removed, then it's not a problem for us. Less burden, less endeavor that we have to fulfill. And if we can find that satisfaction in Krishna, in Vishnu, you know, by serving the Lord, then what's the problem? We just want to be happy. That's all. Right? It's only propaganda that you buy something that someone else has manufactured that'll make him happy, that you buy it, you'll be happy. Right? That's all. Because that's the way a businessman thinks. It's like God. When God's happy, we're happy. So when the businessman is happy, then we're supposed to be happy. Right? You know? Like that. So that's the principle. Krishna is saying that even if you have material, turn to him. Don't go somewhere else. You won't be dissatisfied. Right? You may lose your desires, but be prepared for that. So that's why you need to understand and know that the loss of material desire is actually a good thing. Because when you have material desire, then you have to work very hard to fulfill it. And it's not the material desire that's making us happy. It's the thought that it will make us happy that makes us happy. Right? If we say we get this, we're happy. But once we got it, then we find it didn't make us happy. Otherwise, why do we change? Right? Oh, if we get this, we'll be happy. Then we get it, and it didn't work. If we were happy, we'd be happy. Right? But then we have to go for something else. Why? Because it didn't make us happy. Or, okay, made us happy for 30 seconds. Great. Okay. How long did we endeavor? Right? A little more than 30 seconds. Right? So, therefore, that is the thing. If we intellectually look at it, we'll see that, therefore, it's worth it to go to Krishna for the desires like that. Even if he fulfills them how he wants and removes that desire, then that's fine. Because the desire is not the thing that makes us happy. So therefore, it's not a problem to lose material desire, or that it's fulfilled how Krishna wants it rather than how we want it. Because Krishna knows how to fulfill it so that we are satisfied and we give up our material endeavor. Then, being connected with him, then we'll be happy. Right? Because he's happy. He's always there. We're eternal. Then if we connect with the eternal happy, then we'll be happy. Right? Isn't that Prabhupada says, means we took hippies and made them happies. Yes. Any questions on this? Yes.
You gave the example, Maharaj, of how sometimes a child will approach a parent for something and the parent awards it, but in the way that the parent knows it best, not exactly what the child wanted. Mm-hmm. So those of us that are parents know that that doesn't always make the child happy. So in the same scenario, we approach Krishna, we have a material desire, we want to satisfy it, so we approach Krishna, but he's going to fulfill it however he thinks is best for us. And what's the point? Because, I mean, we have a particular material desire, and we haven't purified ourselves of that yet. So what is the vehicle by which we understand that what we're receiving is actually what's good for us, and okay, just be satisfied?
What generally we see is that we in the process, we lose the desire for it. Krishna rewards it in such a way that we lose the taste for it. So that's how we know that Krishna fulfilled it. Means we may get it, and then once we get it, we see, oh, that's it. You know? Or he may, in such a way, we don't get it for so long, all our endeavors that we just decide, oh, this is not worth it. We start to think about it and see it's not worth it. You know? Or he gives it to us, and then when we're so happy, he takes it away. And then we think about it. You know, so there's many ways. So Krishna is very expert. That's his. So because he's parented all the living entities, so therefore he has a lot more practice than us. But he's pretty good at it. You know. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Intelligence, so I'm probably going to take that.
understand, then we turn to Krishna, like that. In other words, we understand the intelligence has come from Krishna, so we engage it in seeing that it works nicely for Krishna. But if we're unable to understand, then we turn to Krishna to give us that intelligence by which we can understand what's the best thing to do. So the more we are dependent upon the Lord, then the more it works. It doesn't mean that we're useless and don't do anything. That's the idea. Dependency means you become a useless, like in Australia they call them a wuss, right? Like that. You know, just a wet noodle, or, you know, just something like that. Or women, it's a wallflower, I think, you know, like that. It's just absolutely useless. But that's not the process. It means that you use your faculties in Krishna's service. You know, what will get the best result for Krishna. Like that. So then that is the proper use. And if we don't know how to do and that, then we are dependent there. But otherwise we're dependent in general always, whatever is there. Especially if it's something more significant or, you know, it's the start of an activity or it's, you know, like this. We always are dependent on the Lord for that we'll be able to perform nicely.
It means like in the back of our mind, like just aware of Krishna speaks about being conscious of who
yeah.
he is. So assuming I'm coming here to the program, I have to be in my awareness, I'm going to the Hare Krishna program.
Yeah.
While I'm aware, I can do different things,
yeah.
and I know that Krishna will protect me or guide me.
Yeah, like that. Means you see is that where there are keys, means in this, especially in the, means all through the Gita, then it gives the general awareness up to the 12th chapter. It gives the general awareness how to deal. Then from the 12th to the 13th to the 18th, then it gives technically how one can be aware, how one can be aware of the three modes of nature, then how we perform, what causes, what is, how action works, right? The soul is there, the desires. Then the senses will be used because we only view this world through the senses. Without the senses, we don't know what's going on. So then we'll make that endeavor. Then there's the environment in which that activity is going on, like that. Then there's the sanction of the Lord, like this. So all these things are coupled together to give us the result. So then these show us how to be technically aware. Otherwise, we can be generally aware of the Lord, that by His grace and anything we want to do, by His mercy we can do. Or we can be technically aware and watch how it is working. Right? So either way works fine. By the emotion, by the mind, we're fixed on the Lord. Or the intelligence also then is fixed in watching how the Lord is taking care of everything. How we're endeavoring, how we're involved. You know, like that. That kind of thing. Does that make sense? The emotions are coming from the mind. The emotions are seated in the mind. They're not seated in the intelligence or the ego. Yes. Yeah. Means the mind is known as para avarta. Para means transcendental and avarta means mundane. So the mind can work in both fields. So you can experience material emotion or transcendental emotion. That's why even though it's not the highest element, it still is the pivot of our endeavors. We're trying to catch the mind. Because the mind has a desire, you get that desire, then you feel happiness. You don't, you feel distress. Or somebody gets is an obstacle, we may feel anger, you know, or jealousy, envy, you know, where we may be in complete illusion about that desire, getting it, so that'll create illusion or madness. So the mind experiences all those things, but it's based on its desire.
When you said that it's not the highest, the material world of intelligence.
Yeah, it means the intelligence is a higher element, it's a finer element. Intelligence is a finer element of the mind. Mind is very subtle, but more subtle than that is intelligence, more subtle than that is ego.
In the spiritual world, the intelligence is not necessarily the highest.
In the spiritual world, then the taste of exchange or rasa material world also, that is people's purpose. Only the jnanis are trying to get out of the material world, then the intelligence becomes the focus and not the mind. Though, even then, they're still controlled by the mind, because it's the mind that thinks it wants liberation. If I get liberation, I'll be happy. The intelligence doesn't think that. Intelligence only discerns between one thing and another. That's all it does. It makes no decision like that. It can present that, you know, intelligently, you know, this decision looks better, you know, because of the circumstance, but it is not what makes the decision. The mind makes the decision like that. So, therefore, even for the jnanis, it's still the intelligence is being used by the mind to fulfill the desire of the mind. Though that's the main field they function in. While the karmis, their field of functioning is the mind, not the intelligence. But so in devotional process, then that's also the field. Intelligence is used, but it's for fulfilling the need of the mind. But the need of the mind in the spiritual platform is fulfilling Krishna's happiness. Therefore, then that exchange, that relationship with Krishna, that is what is tasted. Therefore, it's the mind that's the pivot. It's the central feature. Does that make sense?
So that then for a bhakti yogi, intelligence becomes an even greater tool than the mind. Because you were saying that for the jnani, the intelligence becomes a servant of the mind.
No. I'm saying for everybody it does.
Even for
the jnani. But his main field is working in the field of the intelligence. But his impetus to work in that field is the mind, right? So even for the devotee, the bhakti yogi, it still is the mind. But his purpose is different. He's not looking for liberation. So the intelligence is used to free us from material entanglement, right? But after that, you don't need material intelligence. Also after that, you don't need material mind. Then you work with the mind as para, as transcendental. So the devotee, his main inspiration, I like doing this, I like this devotional service. I'm suffering, this devotional service is nice, so the mind likes it. So it's become attracted for its own purposes. It wants to make itself happy. But at least it's gone to the right place. And then from doing that, one progresses, and then after a while one sees that actually fulfilling my desire isn't the highest principle. The highest principle is fulfilling Krishna's desire. Just like on the material platform, you fulfill your own desire, that's considered, you know, okay. But if you fulfill someone else's desire, everyone will say that's quite noble or virtuous. So in the same way as if you fulfill God's desire, then we find that that is a better platform for fulfilling our own. So that transition takes place after liberation. Like that, completely. It means before that already, from the neophyte tends to fulfill his own desire. The madhyam tends to fulfill Krishna's desire. Though he fulfills it through mediums that he likes. Like that. What way you like to serve Krishna, he uses that to serve Krishna. So there's no harm in that. But it's still according to what his conditioned nature is and which aspects of it he likes to use. But it's being done purely to please Krishna. That's why they're considered pure devotees. Like that. But then when you get to the transcendental platform and one's in one's spiritual form, there's no more need of the material intelligence or the material mind. So at that time, then that's given up, and one then takes advantage of applying the mind purely to the spiritual platform. You know, so it's absorbed there. So then, does that make some sense? Yeah. On the same subject?
If we were to back up a little bit, something
okay.
You were saying. I may be taking you out of context,
okay.
But you were saying something like how intellect helps you discern what might be better or worse, but it doesn't make a choice.
Yeah.
But that the mind does.
Yeah.
Does the soul ever make a choice? Or
the soul makes the choice to follow the mind. That's the problem.
So in other words, the soul is surrendering to the mind and letting the mind do what it wants?
Yeah, that's why we say whatever the mind says is we say it's me.
Ah.
Right? You're driving down the road a nap and, you know, going down to Sankirtan, and then suddenly it hits you as, hey, wait a minute, I collected $500,000 for this temple. What do I have? No one respects me. I have nothing. I've been doing this for 20 years. That's the mind. That's not us. But because we identify with it, then we say, this is me. I want to do what I want to do. But who's that I? Which I, right? I can be the soul. It can be the mind, the intelligence, or the body. So which I are you talking about? So generally you'll find when this is spoken, you know, it's many varieties. It means the mind, not the soul. Like that. That's the thing, is that's why this analytical study is given in the Gita, so that the devotee can be armed with understanding what's the difference between the consciousness of the soul, the desires of the mind, you know, to accept and reject, the intelligence that discerns between one thing and another, the ego that identifies with what the mind wants and what the senses are able to feel, and then the body, which is the vehicle for carrying all this, like that. So if one discerns, then one can see is that's a desire of the mind. Okay, now I look at this desire of the mind. Okay, then it's not going away. I intellectualize on it. I look at it. I contemplate it. But the mind is very fixed on it. And I have that attachment. My consciousness is there where I also feel the need for that. Therefore, then one goes about fulfilling that desire of the mind according to yajna, according to sacrifice. Then Krishna will be pleased, will be pleased, and at the same time that desire will be removed. So that's the process. If we see that, then our spiritual life is dynamic. So we can have endeavor for whatever our material needs are, but we won't become entangled. But if we identify that I am the mind and what the mind wants is me, then we'll be entangled. We'll be taken away from Krishna consciousness, or our Krishna consciousness will be reduced very severely. But if we don't identify with it, but we know that because from time immemorial I have been identifying with it, so my habit is that, and still my attachments are there. Therefore, what the mind is attracted to, I'm also attracted to. Therefore, then we fulfill it in a proper way. Right? So those who know they're not the body act according to the nature of the body. Those who don't know they're not the body, they act according to, they are controlled by their body. The other ones are in control of the body. You know what I'm saying?
What did you mean? Like you said, those who know that they're not the body act in the nature of the body?
They know what is the nature of the body, so therefore they can actually fulfill the needs of the body. The body, the mind, the intelligence, the false ego. They're the smart ones. The ones who follow what Krishna says, they're the ones who know they're not the body. The ones that refuse to follow are trying to be free from Krishna's directions. They're the ones that are controlled. They're not free. And they think they are the body or the mind. They may say otherwise, but talk is cheap. The reality is what they do. Like that. So that's the thing. It means you can see by what they say what they do. Like that. So that's the thing. So someone who knows, okay, let's say I look at the body, okay, it's an adult body. Therefore, I have to do activities that are adults should be doing. Right? So therefore, you know, at 45 years old, and we're not going out and getting the you know, funniest clothes that a 16-year-old should be wearing. Because we know we're not 16. So we wear something that's appropriate for our age. But those who say, no, why I should be restricted by this, I can do what I want, they're the ones who actually think they are the mind and body. Though they may profess, I'm free, we can do what we like, don't restrict us. They're the ones that are the most absorbed and engrossed. That's the meaning of that Krishna says. Religion, the mode of ignorance, means what's religion is seen as irreligion, irreligion is seen as religion. Because God makes religion. There's not another opinion. If your opinion is against what Krishna says, then it's in the mode of ignorance. That's all. It's a very simple, straightforward, shockingly down-to-earth principle. You know, that's so in your face that it's scary. That's all. And the point is it doesn't matter who you are or who you think you are. It's reality. You know? That's the weight of it. It doesn't matter. We're 30 years devotee, we're initiated by Prabhupada in last life. It doesn't matter. and you know, his normal happy self, because when you come back, you've seen Krishna, you come back to your brothers, it's natural. He was very morose, so he asked him, what is this? So he went through all these things, so without Arjuna saying a thing, he came up and understood that Krishna had left. Otherwise, why would Arjuna look like this? Then he immediately says that he starts praising Krishna. By Krishna's grace, then we had our kingdoms, our you know, wives, our family, our relatives, our position in society, our glory, you know, our victories. All this is by his grace, and no one can say that they didn't have a good situation. You know, emperor of the world is not a bad.
It's not bad.
It's like a it's a little bit better than being like, let's say, the mayor of the bachelor. You can understand it must be pretty good, like that, and they weren't living in Turkey pre, like that, so it's like, so it's, we can see is that they went through Krishna, and they got all their desires fulfilled. At the same time, is then they're all removed, because now they understand that without Krishna, what's the use? So then they all leave for the forest. So the desires are fulfilled at the same time as there is the inspiration to get deeply into one's spiritual life. So it works better, Like the son can try to fulfill his desires without the father, but if he goes with the father, there's much more resources, Like that. Plus he's our well-wisher, so he will help, in what is deserving. But if we go on our own, we may get things we don't, and then we'll suffer. And the father can say, I told you so. we kind of learn later, right? Get hit over the head first and then listen, right? I guess maybe that's the way it works. When something hits you on the head, then the ears open or something. Maybe that's the process. Exchange or relationship, rasa, is experienced on the platform of the mind, not on the platform of the intelligence, right? So therefore, intellectually you can see, but then you're going to choose, right? So the real thing that Krishna is interested in is the exchange between the living entity and himself. Just like, let us say, the child goes to school, right? And when they go to school, then they, the nice teacher gets out, some paper and some crayons, right? And then they draw the traditional, you draw some wavy blue lines, and then you make the brown mountain that's like a triangle, then you put the house on a 45-degree angle, right? Then the chimney with a little smoke, the sun has to have the smile on it, and then you put a bird in the air like that, right? And then you have to draw the tree, right? The brown and then the little green like that. And then the child takes it home, right? So the mother likes that. It doesn't have to be a Rembrandt, right? If the mother was going to go out and buy a painting to hang on the wall, then she would, look for so many things and all this. But because it's being given by the child, therefore it is pleasing to her. And if you probably check in your mother's drawer, she still has that painting. Like that. Because of what it meant. So So that's the whole thing, is the exchange is the real thing. It's not the medium that's important. It's the exchange, it's the endeavor that's nice. Like that. That's the real thing. So that's what Krishna's looking at. So he's already satisfied because he's God. But so the living entities can add to that satisfaction by trying their best to please God. And by that endeavor to please, that's what pleases him. It's the endeavor that pleases, not the actual thing that you do. You know? Does that make sense?
Okay. So let's say, I'm giving you an example. A child, you know, they decide to do a wallpaper painting, which is displeasing. So in that case, in all sincerity, trying to do Christian service, we do mess up in a very bad way. What is the proper attitude to approach Krishna at that point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it means that, see, is that we can, how it guides us what we should do is what is given by the acharyas. You know, the acharyas tell us that these are the ways to approach Krishna, how to please Krishna, this kind of thing. So then if we have that humble attitude, then it makes it much easier to follow in the footsteps of the acharyas. And if we found that we, in a situation we're in that we haven't done that, we have kind of messed up in that, then in a humble mood we approach Krishna and, you know, reveal our mind before him that we're sorry that we've done all this, and that he please accept us and give us the intelligence and direction how to properly engage and please him. And then he'll be happy like that. It means that humility is always the key. If that is there, that's the beginning of all auspiciousness for the living entity. Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, I was thinking, like, sometimes it's difficult because, you know, we're in a association of devotees.
Yeah.
So, you know, we may do something that in all our honest in our hearts we feel was the right thing, or, you know, is the right thing. Then if we mess up, I mean, it's one thing to say to Krishna, you know, Krishna, you knew what was in my heart. But then sometimes it affects other people. And at that point, I mean, how do you resolve it?
Then you go to those people and also say the same thing, sorry, like that. Main thing is ego gets in our way. Because the living entity, to come into the world, then he has to develop the ego, I am God, like that. So it's quite a big ego. So to bring it kind of down, you know, to be able to interact with others is sometimes a great, you know, feat, you know. So if we understand that and try to keep the ego down, I'm servant of Krishna, and understand, you know, my place in whatever is my circle of association, you know, I may be leading it, or I may be following in it, or, you know, what is my part in it, then that will generally keep things in balance. So if something goes wrong, it will be easier to correct it. But if we allow it to inflate itself, then it's very difficult. It's very hard to say, you know, I'm sorry, or very hard to deal. But in any case, that's the best, is to go to those persons who feel that it wasn't good, and, you know, and you know, try to work it out with them. If it's not possible, they're not around, or for some reason it doesn't work, then you have to take shelter of the holy name. And by the holy name's grace, after some time, it won't be immediately, then it will go. That will go like that. But if you go to them, it's gone immediately. But if you can't, then you take shelter of the holy name. Is that okay?
In connection with what you were saying, is it possible, if you have the right attitude, that you would do something wrong? Or say it another way, you wouldn't do the wrong thing if you have the right attitude, or if you have the devotional attitude.
Well, ultimately, if you have the right attitude, then Krishna would most likely give the intelligence that you would do the right thing. And unless there's always the possibility Krishna has a bigger plan, and even though our attitude is right, we do something wrong and there's a bigger thing to learn from it, either for ourselves or for others, like that. So that also is there. Because sometimes we just take what I'm doing, my focus, as the picture, but there's a bigger picture. So it may be that we're endeavoring for one thing, and by that endeavor, even though it may not be successful, Krishna is correcting some other attitude we may have. So we may be doing very well, our attitude's good, we're doing well in one area, we've developed very greatly, but there may be another area where we're behind in development, and so by making those mistakes that may correct that, you know, or coming in contact with situations that don't
we're doing everything nice, and then we're wondering, why are things going wrong? We're doing everything properly. You know, our attitude's right, but it's going wrong. Is it maybe there's something else? It means your attitude's great for this level, but Krishna wants you to go to this level. And you can't go to this level unless you correct another point, another weakness. Because a chain's only as strong as its weakest link. So if you want to go further into a deeper understanding, then you have to also correct those other weak points. So you've been focusing, let's say, on something. Okay, maybe you're being humble or whatever it is. You're chanting nicely, or you're reading very nicely, or attending the temple program, or whatever it may be that you're focusing and getting good results in. And then you may wonder, why are things going wrong? Because I'm getting good results. Because it may be there's a weakness in another field that we didn't look at. Maybe we're proud of that. We're doing well in that, and we're proud of it. So it's not that we're not doing great. We're chanting great. We're doing our sadhana. We're doing the devotional things great. It is good. It is glorious. You can look at it and see. But because of the pride, then that's a weakness. So then Krishna will do something that will reduce that. That may even look like a complete reversal on what we're doing. So if we catch that, then we'll still be able to continue with what we're doing correctly. In other words, what we're doing correctly should always continue. And then when these situations come, then we look at where it gets us. Like if it happens and the pride comes up, or anger comes up, or jealousy, or envy, or whatever it is, that's the weak point. So it's not that there's something wrong with what we're doing necessarily. It's our reaction in that situation. That's the weak point. So then seeing that, then we see, okay, then how to take care of that. Right? Envy comes, why? I'm the controller. So therefore the problem is my sadhana is great, but I think I'm controlling my sadhana. I'm in control of this. I'm controlling, I got up on time, I got out there in time, everything worked exactly clockwork. It's the other people, they're not taking the shower nicely, this, that. They're the ones that are in the way, but I've got it down, So it's true, you have got it down, but the point is why do you have it down? It's by Krishna's grace. By Krishna's grace, he's given you the ability to do things properly, and actually how you want it to happen. Because his quality is sati sankalpa, not ours. So therefore, if he's given us a drop of that, it's his mercy. So that pride then has to go. Then we will see is everybody's not an obstacle to our greatness. Right? Then we start to help them. Try to help them figure out or be inspired why they should get up quicker, take their bath better, be in the car, so we can get there on time, or not forget their beads, or like this. Because then we're able to, then we go to a higher level. Okay, we've helped ourselves. But that's not the higher levels to be able to help others. But if we're proud, we can't do that. So therefore, then there's the need to come to that higher level. So Krishna will point it out in another way. So something may come up, whatever amazing will be, that will be, like that. We'll think, every day I'm there for this program. And then somebody will say, well, that's nice, but, we don't see you for this. And then it's like, how come they can't appreciate, I'm coming every day for this. Why do they have to be so critical? The point is we're proud. If we weren't proud, then we'd think, oh, okay, yeah, that's true. I'm coming for this, but now Krishna's opening my, I focused on this, now he's broadening my view. Okay, you replied it here wonderfully. That's why Krishna's broadening it. You didn't see it naturally. You should have, but the pride blinded it. Like that. So therefore, Krishna gets rid of your blindness, blips the same, same time the pride, and opens that. Then you see. So in many ways, Krishna is working like that. So if we're humble, that humble, tolerant, respectful to others and not expecting respect for us, even though we deserve it, then we'll find the whole process works. All etiquette is there in these four points. It means all the Bhagavad etiquette, all the Pancharatic etiquette, all the Vedic etiquette is contained in these four points. You have those four, then anything within the whole process of devotional service, whether it's according to sadhana or bhava or it will work perfectly. Like that. It means that we are humbler than a blade of grass. A blade of grass has to be humble because it's just a blade of grass. Right? Nothing special. Right? right? It means it's not when you drive your car up there and they stand up. No, you have to be humble, right? You have a, you know, 5-ton car come and sit on top of them, they kind of have to bend down. It's kind of like it's their duty, right? So humbler than a blade of grass means that you have qualities. You're not a blade of grass. You actually have good qualities, have abilities, have opulences, but you're humble, right? Example by Lord Chaitanya is given of a tree that bears fruit. A tree that bears fruit, the more fruit it has, the more it bows. It bows down. The less fruit, the more it stands up. No fruit, it stands up straight. Right? So a really proud person is a person that has no fruit. He has nothing good to gain. The person who's actually humble, you know, then you can see the good qualities. So that kind of humility means humbler than a blade of grass. Then more tolerant than a tree. A tree is offering everything. Right, the tree is giving you a place to sit, it's giving you shelter from the sun, you know, it's giving you fruit, this bark, it roots, everything is there. But the person still comes and may cut down the tree. And the tree is not complaining. So that's more tolerant than a tree. Even though you have something to offer, you're giving, and they don't reciprocate, you're still tolerant. Right? That's the principle. So okay, I go out there and, you know, sit out in the sun or something like that, I'm tolerant. That's okay. The real thing is that you're doing something for somebody and they don't reciprocate properly, you're tolerant. That's then a symptom of that. Then offer respect to others. We respect all living entities because we see whatever is Krishna's potency in them. Everybody is carrying a potency of the Lord because the material world is only Krishna's potency. The Virat Purush, or the universal form, has entered into everything and given it a portion of his potency. Otherwise, it won't be what it is. It's just dead matter. Right? So something's beautiful because it carries some of Krishna's beauty. Something's opulent because it carries Krishna's opulence. Something's powerful because it carries Krishna's power. Like that. So therefore, there's something to respect in everybody. Like that. And then there's the soul, which is the eternal servant of the Lord. So that's to be respected. So therefore, if you respect everybody, all etiquettes of respect are already attained. Because if you can't, means the living entity thinks I'm God, so I'm the respectable one. But then the Vedas point out as well, someone who's older than you should respect, more wealthy, more influential, has more knowledge, more famous, they should also be respected. Women should be respected, parents should be respected, teachers should be respected, you know, administrative authorities should be respected. Like that. And then that brings us back then the spiritual leaders, then God. So then at least in these, you know, 10 categories like that, then okay, I respect everybody else, that's another thing. But at least I start here, right? They respect me. But at least you start there. So that's where the Varnashram starts. At least respect this much. You know, they're not asking you to respect everybody. Pancharatra will take it further, that you have to respect all living entities. Like that, because it's aimed at pleasing the Lord directly. So then, you know, that's the higher. So if you already have that, then it works nicely. Right? So then you're respectful, and then that you are not disturbed if you are not respected. Right? So even though you are respectable, you haven't been respected, so you don't get upset. Why they're not respecting? Because you can have four, this amanina mana dana, you could have four combinations of this, right? I respect others, but they better respect me in return, in reciprocation. You see that a lot. Many times aristocratic people are like that. They were very respectful to others, but you also have to respect them. You're disrespectful to them, then you'll get in trouble, right? Then you'll have the person who doesn't expect any respect for themselves, but doesn't expect that no one else should want it either. You know, you see this many times in Western intellectuals. They don't need any for themselves, but, you know, what's your problem? Who do you think you are? Right? What was that guy, that Greek guy or something? follow this, then all etiquette will always be followed. So the more you know about Krishna's creation and his potencies, then the more you know where to respect Krishna. Like that. You know. But what you know, you'll respect. And as your knowledge grows, then your respect will also grow. Does that make sense?
Could I follow on?
Yeah.
So the devotee might humbly accept whatever's happening to him as an opportunity to advance, to see more broadly, or to make some progress, to give up some attachments. And we can also understand that everything happens by Krishna's arrangement. But sometimes people criticize that, why are bad things happening if Krishna is arranging? Yeah.
Why do bad things happen to good people? The point is that bad things only happen to bad people. The person is an illusion that they're good. That's one thing. And this is very general. If something happens to you, it's because you've done that to others. It means if you're not a devotee, you're getting exactly the same weight and degree and situation that you've given to someone else. You walk out in the street, you get run over by a Mack truck. That's because last time you were driving the Mack truck and you ran the guy over. That. If you're a devotee, then it may be adjusted. You know, you should have been run over for 100 lifetimes, so you only get run over once. Or you're supposed to be run over by a Mack truck and just some, you know, crazy kid on his bicycle, you know, mows it down. You know, so something is there. So it's coming from past. There's something in the past that's there. But because if Krishna arranging with the devotees, it's not necessarily bad. It looks bad to us. But it may be purifying. Means what you would have to go through to purify yourself to go back to Godhead, then Krishna arranges that. So in that situation, all impediments to going back to Godhead are removed. Like that. So if there's a lot of something stuck there, then it may be removed in that way. So therefore, it's not a bad thing. If we look at it from that point. From the mundane, yes, it looks bad. But, you know, that's not necessarily the best vantage point like that. So something's only happening. If you are on the platform of advanced devotional service, then sometimes things happen to that devotee, not because they deserve it, but the example of how they'll go through it in a Krishna conscious way is necessary for others to understand how they should deal with what happens to them because they deserve it. Like that. Means, you know, Yudhishthira didn't deserve what he got because they're the Lord's eternal associates. But they are giving the example of when these things happen. You know, and these are just regular day-to-day stuff. You have brothers that are envious, trying to take things away from you, you know, deal legally, deal in a physical way, you know, like that. Deal improperly with you, with your brothers, you know, like this. You know, it's like, it's just normal day-to-day stuff. How you're supposed to take it, what's the attitude? So because the pure devotees aren't attached, therefore they will set the proper example. Someone who's attached may get upset like that. So they do it in the proper way. So that is also there. So we either understand, we just look at it. If something happens, this is the easy way to check. If something happens to us that is unexpected, first check if you're a pure devotee or not. If you are, then maybe it's Krishna's trying to set some example for others. And if you're not, then know that you've done something to deserve it. It's you know, pretty straightforward, you know. But like that. Yes.
To ask about your point about being around for 30 years and still being in mind. Does that mean one who's not committed to the process?
The one who's not committed? No. What we were meaning was just that attitude. It's not that someone who's been around 30 years generally has made great advancements in so many areas, but there may be some place where they're weak, so they make those mistakes. That's the thing, is the mind may be very clever. So the mind has accepted, okay, I like to chant, or I like to do so many devotional things, but it may have still make the desire for fame or distinction or something like that. So then there's the difficulty is when an opportunity for that comes up, and the mind notices, hey, I haven't been noticed for this, then we get caught. So It was specific just for that point. It's not in general. He said the process works. Otherwise, I mean, generally, if it would be rare for someone to be in the process for 30 years and then not do something like that, you know, because it's so powerful. So despite us, it works. That's the great thing about it. Because if it were dependent upon us, then there's a problem. But because the holy name, you know, doesn't wait around for anything. It doesn't wait for us. It means other processes of yajna, you have to be qualified, then they work. But the holy name starts working even when we're not qualified. Like that. And so the more we qualify ourselves, then the faster it works. Because we're dealing directly with Krishna. See, the idea of the, you have the Shuddha Nam or the pure name, and then there's the offensive chanting and all that. That's us. It's not Krishna. It means the name that even the most improper person is chanting, if he's received the name from bona fide sources, he's chanting the pure name. It means the name is pure, but his understanding of it is impure. Therefore, his dealing with the name is impure. But the name is pure. It's not that he's chanting the impure name. No, he's chanting the pure name, but his chanting of it is impure. That's the thing. So sometimes we forget that we are dealing directly with Krishna, and he has all potency, but because of our ignorance, we're blinded to that fact. So since we have that opportunity, because yajna and other things only become powerful to the degree of your qualification. So the more qualified you are, the greater the result. But in this age, that wouldn't work, because no qualification means no result. But we're dealing directly with Krishna in his full potency. Therefore, despite ourselves, we advance. That's the the realism. And then if we make some endeavors for that, then it starts to become dynamic. You know, so therefore, even the guys on the street, you know, they're on the street and they see the devotees go by and they start joking, "Hey, Hare Krishna." Then that person who chanted, plus all his other gooky friends, they make advancement. Just hearing his chanting, they make advancement. So that's the specialness of the holy name. So therefore, it means to make a point, you'll emphasize one aspect or another. You know, so we weren't focusing on that from a broad point. We were making a very specific point that sometimes the point is that sometimes even elevated devotees have a tendency to be distracted by their own mind and identify with it. So they have to be very careful to always be contemplating, you know, with the help of the intelligence and the you know, directions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, if that desire of the mind is correct or not. And if it is, then great. And if it's not, then how to adjust it, how to purify it. Does that make sense? How much is in our hands and how much is destiny? Ah, yes. Traditional 5-hour conversation. Okay, we'll try to say it in a nutshell because we don't have 5 hours. Is everything is in your hands, but what you do later on, you're going to receive, right? Means, let us say you go up to the 10th story and you drop a rock off the 10th story. So it is your desire to do that. But now that the rock is going to fall down and hit down to the ground, that's the result. That's destiny. You understand? So what you're doing right now is creating your destiny in the future. And what you're getting now is what is from your what you've done in the past. That's simply how it goes. So basically what you get from the past, from your destiny, what you do with it in your free will, that creates your destiny in the future. That's all. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I appreciate what I said. It's very clear that we have to look at ourselves. We understand that actually the instruction of Krishna comes to the pure yogi. So
condition, we don't know what pleases Krishna. Only on the transcendental platform, then we actually know, because it springs naturally from the heart. So according to the mood in which we want to please and serve Krishna, then we manifest that particular spiritual form. Then we are trained in the proper attitude in that form by those who are already the Lord's eternal associates. They give us the directions. But in this material world, then we have to be trained according to the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So what you want to do, you just have to see that it's approved by authority. Then we can be confident that will please Krishna. But if it's outside of that, then it comes in the category of sakam. That's aropya bhakti. In other words, we overlay our desire on top of Krishna's. There's another term for that. Project. We project our desires on top of the service that we're doing. So it has a dual aspect, like that. So as long as we're doing that, it still is devotional service, but our pleasure is our actual motive. Then with time that becomes purified, then we will start to look at it what Krishna likes. So even if what we're doing may be authorized by scriptures, we may be doing that process of aropya bhakti. We may be projecting our own desire onto it. That's our motive for doing it in the first place. And then later that will be purified, that we're doing it not because I want to do it, because Krishna likes it done in this way. So even if it is according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, we still have to be careful of these two. So there's always that aspect of, is our motive for ourselves or motives for Krishna? If it's there and we have that ability, we should do it, because that desire is there, and if we have that nature so we could do that nicely for Krishna, we should do it. And then by doing it for Krishna the best that we can, even though it may have a dual purpose, with time, if we maintain that consciousness that Krishna is involved, then our side of the dual will go down, and then Krishna's will be what's left. Your duty, like that. It means like if it's your child, then it's your duty to take care of. They're getting problems, the bug bit them because of their karma, but it's the parent's duty to take care and try to take care of that. Or, you know, any adult in the community or like that. You know, it's just, you see, is because the living entity, they think they're going to be happy through that, or they're getting distressed from that. So because they identify with it, then we help them on that level but try to bring them further. So first we're helping them with that. You catch them at their level, right? When you preach, you catch them first at their level. Then you take them from level up. So since they're having that distress, first you deal. Like let's say somebody's very emotionally distressed. First you have to deal with their emotion. Once they feel comfortable that you are understanding them and that, and it's calmed to a point, then you can start to bring in philosophy or other aspects of etiquette and culture. But until you've caught them, it's very hard. So the natural thing is there is the natural kindness of the living entity. Like Vyasadeva is writing the Mahabharata out of kindness for the living entity, that he thinks that enjoyment in this material world is something to gain. It's good. So therefore he's saying is that if you're going to do it according to how Krishna wants, then you'll actually get it. Because if you don't follow the religious principles, you won't get it. So it's out of his compassion for the living entity in their material desire. So it's a natural thing for the devotees to see it on that platform. But then you have to then look at it from, it's a dual thing. That compassion is there, but at the same time there is seeing what is the standard. So you don't compromise. compromise the standard for the compassion. At the same time, you don't compromise the compassion for the standard. You know, so both have to be there. Because one is the etiquette, and the other is the philosophy. So both have to run at once. Is that okay? Okay. So we'll end here.